Hello, Ben here. I'm just editing this episode. I've just got to the end of editing it, and it strikes me that this episode is a little bit spicy, potentially, if you're listening with children. I know some of you listen with kids, but this episode is just a little bit more lewd content warning than usual. So just to let you know that. And features scenes of amorous congress with a minotaur. Yeah. Anyway, enjoy!
Uh-oh.
Lewd content warning. Lewd content. Content.
Hey, hey, hey!
Welcome to Three Bean Salad.
Welcome.
Hello.
In the moments before we just pressed record, all three of us said words to the effect of, I don't have a single thought in my head.
We've seen a lot of each other recently because of the old tour. I think the only news I have for you is that since I've last seen you, I've bought a mattock. And that's my strongest...
Hang on.
A mattock?
That's my strongest gambit.
Is a mattock related to a shaddock?
Far from it. Far from it. It is not a consumable. It is the...
Okay, Mike, don't tell us what it is.
Don't tell us what it is.
Okay. Okay, let's play a game of mattock.
I think we can work this out from first principles. Okay, so it's unlike a shaddock / pomelo / pomelo.
Correct.
So it's not a fruit.
So it's not a fruit.
Correct.
Okay.
Mattock.
Okay, process of elimination. So far, you've knocked fruit off of all things.
We're on our way.
So you've still got veg, the animal kingdom.
Medicinal roots.
Yeah, astronomical phenomena.
wind patterns.
Dead religions.
Concepts of all kinds.
Except ones relating to fruit.
Other podcasts.
Rucksacks.
Wicker products.
Wicker products. Anything to do with beeswax. And that's a whole host of products, isn't it? It's candles. It's soaps.
It's not a kind of donkey milk.
No. And you would know that terrain, wouldn't you, BP? Because that's the last thing you bought for yourself, wasn't it? A bar of donkey milk soap.
I did buy myself a bar of donkey milk soap.
Because of the tour, we've been spending much more time in each other's physical presence.
Yes.
Than we normally do.
And also observing how each of us maintains self-care on the road.
That's been one of the things we've noticed, isn't it? Mm. So Ben likes to entirely encase himself in a sort of beeswax sort of cocoon.
Yes.
Doesn't he? Which he breaks out of just before going on stage.
Yes. And then lathers himself in the milk soap of whichever ungulates he can find. Yeah. Most recently, that was the donkey.
Yeah. So basically, if it's got hooves, then he'll drink its milk.
I'm not drinking the milk. I'm milking it and soaping it.
Soaping it.
Yeah.
So this was when we were in... I'm just thinking now already... Already I'm mentally writing the memoirs of our tour, and it's several volumes, isn't it? The amount that we've
and can, what you, we've can you remember the name of the place you went to, Henry?
Yorkshire Moors.
No, sir.
On the way to the place we went to. It was the Peak District.
Correct.
So we went to a small town called, insert town name.
Castleton. Which was home to which castle?
Insert castle name here.
I thought I had it. It was like the Cleverals or something. It was some sort of...
Peveril.
Yeah. That's right. Peveril Castle.
It's good stuff.
There was a gift shop in the town, and it was quite a strange... We were just walking past it, and there was a sign in the street outside this gift shop, which said something like, ask us about our donkey milk soap.
Oh, it has a strong effect on people. Pam will flee. Ben didn't even check for traffic and just was straight over the road and into the gift shop, wasn't he?
Can I clarify? It didn't say exactly what Henry said. It said, ask us about our famous donkey milk soap.
We're walking down this little street. Peveril Castle was casting its shadow across the Peak District.
Yes.
And
lovely stuff.
In the town of Castleton. And as soon as Ben saw the sign saying donkey soap, please ask us about our famous donkey soap, Ben unleashed himself towards the door of the shop like a bolt from one of the crossbows that we tried out in Leeds Armouries Museum.
Beautifully crowbarred in.
Only 2 days before. Mm. But Ben was like a bolt. He was straight in the door. You barged two old ladies out of the way. I don't know if you noticed that. One of them completely totaled herself.
Oh, completely. If there had been a troop of clickety-clackety cyclists passing through, they'd have had no chance.
They'd have
cut through them like a scythe.
Tossed hither and thither.
Yeah.
And you went straight up into the grill of the little old lady working behind the till. You grabbed her by her collars.
Yes, the metaphorical grill. Yeah.
Well, they've got the grill in place for just this kind of situation, which people get too excited about the chunky milk soap. Come at you too fast. No, so I'm exaggerating for comic effect, but it's worth it, probably, isn't it?
Mm.
But you were really excited about it.
What I thought was weird was that the shop had a big sign outside saying "Ask us about our famous donkey milk soap," but then when he got in there, they hadn't made it obvious where the donkey milk soap was.
That's true.
I think to make you look at the other wares. Do you know what I mean? Like,
very clever.
So then I had to go around the whole shop.
Marketing.
Yeah.
Yes. It's in the same way that supermarkets will often...
They'll have a sign saying, ask us about our famous donkey milk soap, won't they?
Yes. And sometimes as you walk in, the smell will be donkey udders. They pump the smell of donkey udders out
If you look at the ceiling, there's a sort of massive papier-mâché donkey udder.
Sometimes there's a huge papier-mâché donkey udder. Yeah. And the udders will point you to sections of the shop that they want you to...
That's why people say look up, and people don't.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all subliminal, isn't it? The way the consumers are controlled around these spaces, almost always using donkey pheromones, donkey nipples, and donkey secretions as the key sort of enticement, isn't it?
Mm, all of which can be made into different skincare products.
Yeah.
So what I want to know, Ben, was it this a gift? Have you lathered yourself and the bean machine in this soap? What's happening?
So I think when I bought it, I thought, this will be a gift.
Mm.
But just sort of running the maths on it a bit, I think...
Yeah.
I don't
What's
think...
the messaging of that gift?
What exactly?
Yeah, who is that appropriate for? It's a bit like, yeah, I really like Ben. I mean, he's a great friend, like, great guy. He's always been there for me.
But I would like to keep him at arm's length for a bit. I'll give him some donkey milk soap.
It's just a little bit... Yeah, it's like, oh, maybe just cool it down with Ben for a bit. if you gave someone some document, so, because it's a bit, all it does to me is it suggests that the next thing will happen is you're going to give someone document, so you'll then explain it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thing will be, you know what, you'll say, it'll be simpler if I just lather you myself. For some reason.
Things are going to get out of hand quickly.
Because I think, I think that in the context, for some reason, of a Peak District town with a quaint gift shop, donkey milk soap seems like the most obvious purchase in the world. But then when you're in the cold light of day and you're giving it to someone, I think it feels weird. So I think I'm going to self-lather myself with it.
Yes. Okay.
But I haven't yet done so.
Okay, well, I can't wait to hear what the effects are. it might be astounding. It might be absolutely deadly. We've got no idea. You might be completely hairless everywhere that the bar touches.
Yeah.
In an instant.
Or the opposite.
Or the opposite. You don't know.
A thick donkey weft all over.
Yeah. And a whole phalanx of donkey suitors following you wherever you go.
It's one of those ones that donkey milk soap, it could go either way. Is that a luxury? So if I was to open, for example, a hamper of donkey milk soap as a sort of a Christmas gift.
Mm.
It feels like it can go either way. It's either that's a super luxury soap.
Mm.
I mean, they've actually, think about it, how much it must cost. And to get the various permissions in place, obviously you have to ask the king, obviously. So it almost feels like, is that like super luxury? Almost like a sort of, you know, we will bring you silks and spices and riches the likes of which you have never seen. And we will top it all off with donkey milk soap. Do you know what I mean? Feels like something you might promise a king, a medieval king.
Yes.
Well, yes, Cleopatra used to bathe in ass's milk, didn't she?
Yes.
Was it ass's milk?
Yeah.
Yes. As opposed to...
I was getting confused with asp's milk, but asp's, she died with asp's.
She died because of an asp.
She didn't milk
a poisonous snake.
Right? She didn't try and milk. Although that would be milking something too far, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But look, I think what we're unearthing something quite interesting about human civilization and culture here, isn't it? Which is facts. You can milk any animal, right? Any animal can be milked, but we only choose to milk certain ones. Why is that? Because there are taboos around milk. There are taboos around milking. Like, to milk an asp doesn't feel right.
Also completely impossible.
So is an ass not like a male donkey? How do asses relate to donkeys?
I think they're just the same thing, aren't they?
Right. Yeah, okay, so, yeah, donks, okay, so there is a tradition there of luxury.
But it feels transgressive because, I mean, the idea that there might... I mean, is there anything more adorable than a little donkey foal, if that's the right word? Do you know what I mean? The idea of one of those going a bit thirsty for the day.
Oh, good point.
For the sake of Bon Jovi's armpits.
Yeah.
You know, that transgression adds to the sense of luxury, doesn't it? Do you know what I mean?
But here's the thing that's interesting, why I think it cuts both ways, is you could also sell it to me as, oh, it's the cheapest soap of all time.
Mm. They are pissing out milk left, right and centre. Yeah, you don't know what to do with it.
It's literally
got to do something with it.
It's horribly rancid. It can't be.
It's completely rancid. I mean, think about it. It's donkey milk. It's utterly rancid.
Foals won't go anywhere near it. They're very much jam on toast, first thing.
It doesn't dribble in a satisfying way. It dribbles in a really gloopy, nasty, irregular way. It's donkey milk. I mean, things are so bad at the moment, we're having to use donkey milks. You know what I mean? It feels like
a milk of extremes, for sure.
Feels like it's definitely a milk of extremes.
Mm.
To call it donkey milk soap, is that to imply that all soaps are made of milk?
No. It implies that this one is.
So that's
specifically out of the milk of a donkey, I'd say.
So what we should be calling it is donkey milk soap, not donkey milk soap, which is what I think we've all been calling it. I have. Hold my hands up.
What's your emphasis of trouble?
So it's not donkey milk soap, it's donkey milk soap. To call it donkey milk soap would be to imply that this is donkey milk soap as opposed to cat milk soap or your traditional wolf milk soaps or whatever. It's donkey milk soap.
You want to bracket the donkey milk together?
Yes.
Okay.
Mike?
Yeah. Yes.
Could you milk Pam?
Oh, God, no.
Pam. 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 Pam, 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 Pam.
Good girl, Pam. Good girl, Pam. Oh, Pam.
Pam, 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 Pam. No, Pam, Pam, Pam. That's an interesting question. I think we'd struggle to. She has been spayed.
Ah.
Bless her. So she will never give forth puppies or sort of lactate naturally.
She's a castrato.
I think that would require a degree of hormonal treatment, which I'm not going to put her through.
Fair.
I don't think a Peak District gift shop could have a sign saying, please ask us about our famous dog milk soap. That wouldn't be right.
No, it should be, please don't ask us about...
Please don't ask us about our infamous
dog milk soap. It's on the other side of the sandwich board.
So we're no closer to finding about what a mattock is. It mattock?
Yes,
mattock. Oh, yeah, so hang on,
is it a weapon?
I'm sure it has been used as a weapon, but that was not its purpose.
Oh, that's a good clue.
Its primary purpose.
Is it a small miniature carpet that's just for the buttocks?
No, it's a good guess, particularly given what I've just said about weapon use. Because obviously that would lend itself very well
to
a medieval battle.
Yeah. Because you know you've got those little carpets that go around the base of a toilet.
Yes,
the U-shaped ones, which are designed to absorb piss. And keep the piss in the room, rather than having it be cleaned away and washed off and completely lost and wasted.
I think they've fallen out of favour.
Yeah, I think they have. Yeah,
From our childhood, I don't know if many younger listeners will have even had the chance to piss on them at all.
If you go to a B&B run by,
yeah.
A couple in their 80s, they might have one of those.
I think it's called a pedestal mat.
Is it?
They've got a pedestal mat?
Yeah. That's quite a grand title.
That is grand. A pedestal mat.
A donkey milk pedestal mat.
Only needs changing once every 5 years.
Completely saturated in donkey milk. He won't even notice the piss.
But I was wondering whether mattock could be a version of that that's for the top of the toilet, so for you to sit on and feel comfortable that you're on a car.
I think to modern ears, the name is misleading. I assume back in the day there must have been some sense to the name, but to a modern English speaker's ears.
Okay, is it some kind of tool?
Correct.
Oh.
But for where? For what? What environment?
The garden?
Is it for removing the footwell of a car?
Again, Henry's making some very strong and bold choices, ultra-specific choices. But, I mean, Ben is correct, but actually there is something in what Henry said that I think it would actually be quite useful for that. Of all the tools I have in my house and shed, Were I to desire to remove the footwell from my car, I think I would reach for the mattock.
Is it a kind of blunt sort of smashing tool for smashing through walls, smashing through bits of wood, smashing stuff up?
Hello.
What?
Ah. Don't know about blunt for smashing through wood, but smashing through, I mean, there's an element of that going on.
Wood. Smashing.
Wood.
Smashing and wood.
Smashing and wood.
And garden.
Is it a wood chipper?
And gardens. No, sir.
Is it a big saw on a stick?
No, but it has a stick.
It's on the end of a stick?
Mm.
But it's not a saw?
But, no.
Does it harvest olives from any tree?
No, it more harvests...
Is it a way of killing a sparrow mid-air?
It could be used for that. But I think the collateral would be obscene.
So it's not. Is it bladed? Is it bladed?
Double-bladed.
Double-bladed?
Double-bladed, sir.
Oh, is it like a pair of scissors on a stick?
No, sir.
Is it a way of making a scrambled egg while the eggs are still in the nest?
It would be hugely effective for that.
It's the freshest scramble on earth.
It would be highly effective for a mattock scramble, beyond shadow of a doubt. It's two blades, and they are at 90 degrees to t'other.
What? How's that?
Yes.
Like that?
No. No, not in that orientation.
Do they snip? It's not
no
garden shears.
Do they spin round?
No.
Is it like for cutting grass?
No.
Is it to do with trees?
Yes.
Is it for taking the bark off trees for some reason?
No.
Is it for checking...
Go down the tree.
Is it for checking if there's a tortoise asleep in your tree trunk?
It would be useful for that, but the tortoise would not survive. You'd have the answers quickly, but brutally.
Are you making your own galvanised tree rubber at home?
Yes, but that's unrelated. I'm trying to save money on tyres. They're getting so pricey these days.
Are you making and storing your own sap? Because I know you've always dreamt of becoming completely sap independent. To not rely on any sort of commercial government sap whatsoever.
We are a sap citadel here. Yes, that's official now.
Yeah.
You want to go down the tree? Take
the trunk, the roots.
Yes. Hello.
It's a root masher.
You're making your own cork flip-flops.
Again, Ben is using a different kind of logic to the magical child, Henry, and he's on it. He's done it. I'm going to get the mattock.
Oh, my God, I can't wait to see this mattock.
What's he doing? What's he doing with roots?
Your handle.
What? Oh, my God.
Your mattock.
Whoa. Oh, it's one of those.
Oh, my God.
Fuck. Put it all the wrong way around.
Careful, Mike.
I'm going to try again.
Bloody hell.
Here we go.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow. I'm going to be quite careful now not to take any large chunks of myself off.
So basically, to explain to listeners, it looks to me
it's the pickaxe's brutal cousin.
Yeah, it's like what an old prospector might have in the gold rush.
So at one side, you've got a sort of axe thing in the usual orientation, and the other side is like a sort of 90-degree axe.
Oh,
so
my
God.
So that's
the hewing there, and the other bit is for the prying of roots and tree stumps.
Can I say, it's absolutely horror film... It's a 1970s horror film poster, and the film is called Wayne.
Yes.
And it's Mike's face, and Mike is holding that, and it's Wayne's coming to get you.
Yeah.
It's got real horror because it's like you can see that it has some sort of purpose that isn't to do with taking people's heads off, but Wayne clearly has decided that's what he's going to do with it, and it's going to be really good at it.
Oh, and it would be perfect for taking someone's head off.
Yeah, it's just
hue and pry.
Oh, it's got so much...
Hue and pry.
There's so much hidden violence in it, or potential in it.
Yeah. Blimey. There's a very good chance that this will be the end of me. I fully acknowledge that.
So what's the plan? Are you just going to take it to a PTA meeting and start sort of throwing your weight around?
Listen, when your children get bad grades, there's only one source of action. I've got some roots and stumps to get rid of.
So are you bonsaiing your tree? Are you going to try and bonsai it?
I'm clearing. I'm fully clearing an old naughty tree stump. It's taken me a while. Hence the old mattock.
Is that the tree that you fell off while looking for?
It's the very same one, the bay tree. It remains my bête noire.
Mike, he won't always do it immediately, but Mike will have his revenge.
It's taken a long time.
If
it's
Mike
nearly
falls
a year
off you and damages himself.
It's nearly a year since that happened.
You're taking the whole tree down, are you?
It's down to the stump now.
Wow.
And
That's proving hard work to get up.
So did you get all rid of the top bits?
Oh yeah.
Using chopping and so on?
Using chopping, using an old axe I found that the old people who used to live here left behind, and a mini chainsaw.
So now there's just a stump there, but if you left the stump, then of course the thing that you hate the most is will find a way, and fresh shoots will grow.
Poor life. And it's just going to be taunting me, sitting there taunting me. So up it comes.
I think the mattock is quite an uncontrollable force of violence, is what I'm getting. Because when you were holding it earlier, Mike, there didn't seem to be any way of controlling. It seems to be weighted in a way that it kind of, it rotates fairly randomly, that the head comes down slamming and you don't know why. And suddenly you're being shift. It feels like it's wielding you suddenly. And then,
it's a tool that's very much in charge. Yeah.
It feels.
Yeah, certainly the way I use it. Yeah.
Yeah. It feels extremely dangerous and random. Mm. It also, I'm just looking at pictures of mattocks online.
Yes. And mattock catastrophes.
Well, a lot of those come up. For example, there was the great mattocking of an entire coatload of pensioners in the Pennines. Which happened last year.
They'd just gone out for a simple day out on the bus to go and pick up some donkey milk soap from a lovely Pennines.
There was a middle-aged man just trying to dig up a hedge. Things get out of control quite
And it happened on the way back. That they say the reason it was such a bad tragedy, it happened on the way back from the donkey milk farm, which they'd gone to visit. They'd all bought loads at the gift shop. And, of course, the whole bus was super lubricated. Because, of course,
going, isn't it?
It's still, the catastrophe is still happening. The bus is still crashing. And it feels like it's possibly become a permacrash now. Which you can now visit as part of the trip to the Pennines. It's because, of course, donkey milk soap is a super lubricant. So anyway, I'm looking at pictures of mattocks online. They've got that horrible look to them, which is, you can see that it's a medieval technology. It's a pre-Enlightenment bit of kit. It comes from a simpler and more violent time.
It's an item that is dangerous, but comes with no safety features whatsoever.
That's right.
You know, there is no scabbard. There is no emergency sort of key that springs out if you fall over or anything like that.
It comes from a time where if as you will, you accidentally behead one of your five sons with it.
Yeah, it's from a numbers game era.
Yes. It was always a numbers game. That's why you had the five sons. You only ever wanted two. So
they didn't get the plague, annoyingly. So you've just got to give them a swift mattock at 18. Mike, are you wearing any kind of personal PPE whilst using the mattock? A cycling helmet, perhaps?
I have told myself that even if I have the urge and I'm feeling lazy, I will not operate the mattock in flip-flops. I've told myself that, at the very least. Yeah, but beyond that, that's about it. I might wear a pair of shades. I sometimes wear a pair of shades or glasses. And if there might be chips a flying, I'm in the habit of doing that.
But that's just to look cool, right?
Mike, that is such a moment from the trailer for the serial killer film.
Slowly pick on his shades.
You with the shades and the wielding the mattock.
In the dead of night.
Yeah. It's absolutely terrifying. Just looking at it, it makes me think of in an American film where the cops pull up the car, they're talking to the guy in the front seat, the driver's seat, seems okay, and then they glimpse under a bit of tarpaulin in the back, the head of a mattock sticking out.
Yeah.
And they're like, we've got our guy.
But also we're finished. Yeah.
Before we pressed record, Henry, you received an email, what seemed like an email.
Oh, yeah.
And then said, oh my God, oh God. And then I said, what? Okay. And he said, maybe I'll tell you on the podcast.
Okay, so I'll tell you. So basically, while we're having a little break, I glanced at my phone and my algorithm had thrown up something at me.
All right.
And you know when people say the algorithm?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's saying the algorithm the whole time at the moment.
Yeah.
Do they mean is it the algorithm or my algorithm? Is it the algorithm?
I don't know.
Is the final word on current society. We've done it. Yeah, so anyway, the algorithm, whatever the fuck that means. has thrown up something which made me think that the other thing which other people are saying all the time at the moment, which is, oh, is it listening? Is the algorithm listening?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was having evidence that maybe it is listening,
mm-hmm.
because I got thrown up a review of a book, because we were talking about donkey milk soap and different kinds of milking of animals, mm-hmm. and the taboo of milking and so on. And I got sent a review of a book called Morning Glory Milking Farm.
No.
And I've just been reading about it. It's a monster romance / erotica novel.
Yeah.
By C.M. Nascosta.
Okay.
The main character is Violet, a woman in her mid-20s, overeducated, burdened by student debt, and struggling financially. She's at a point where she's about to have to go back and live with her parents. It's basically me, but when I was in my mid-30s. Plot setup. She responds to a job offer in Cambric Creek. So it seems like a normal job,
yeah,
with good pay and benefits.
Until she's asked to wank off a monster, isn't that?
By the way, another little tip is if anything seems like a normal job, then be suspicious, because that might mean that it isn't actually.
Okay.
If it is a normal job, then it's fine. If it seems like a normal job.
Yeah.
Mm. Also, for example, if the boss, Harold Blimpton, seems like he isn't actually a...
Mm-hmm. So cryptozoological horror.
Yeah. Then he might be that he is. Mm. For example, if he seems like he has hooves, it might be that he does.
But if he has hooves, that's fine.
But if he has hooves and he's open about it, I don't see why you should judge someone for being hooved. In fact, if it was Ben and a hooved man was giving him a job interview and said, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Ben would say, I'd see myself siphoning off your milk and turning it into soap.
It behooves me to do so.
It behooves me to milk you. And that's why you've never ever been employed by an ungulate, have you?
No. Well, I've done 0 hours and stuff, but never fully employed.
Yeah.
Never signed a contract with an ungulate.
Yeah. Apart from that one job you did do for that horse.
Not an ungulate.
Is a horse not an ungulate?
It has hooves.
The algorithm is listening. I've just been sent an ad for a book called My Ungulate Lover. Society said it was wrong, but it behooved me. So,
the algorithm is very much putting you in the ignorant but horny section, right?
Which is actually a massive market. You have a laugh. If you can tap into ignorant but horny, you'd be the richest man on earth.
I think this sentence from the Wikipedia is going to clear up about the ungulate thing.
Okay,
yes, please.
In 2009, morphological work found that aardvarks, hyraxes, sea cows and elephants were more closely related to each other and to cengus, tenrex and golden moles than to perissodactyls and artiodactyls.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to trust someone called morphological work. That's clearly a made-up name. So what was can you summarise that in a more easy digestible way, please, Ben? What was the conclusion anyway?
I think he's saying that the world of ungulates is the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, I don't know.
What comes of Violet? I want to know about Violet. You've dangled a narrative carrot.
Horses are ungulates.
Yes. So it seems like a normal job with good pay and benefits, no experience needed. The catch, the clientele. Are minotaurs.
Okay.
We've all been there.
It was a bit of a dry start. And there's your gear shift. You're a third of the way into the book, and all of a sudden, we need to spice this up a bit. Editor's note. Do you think this slightly difficult group of locals could be minotaurs?
The trouble is, we've already designed the front cover, and there aren't minotaurs on the front.
But how lovely to hear that there's a community of minotaurs, you know, who we associate with normally with being such an isolated creature. You know?
That's true.
Well, he was very much a one-off, wasn't he? He was the minotaur, wasn't he?
He was the minotaur. He was kept in a labyrinth. He didn't get the chance to even kind of, you know, mingle with other minotaurs, let alone breed.
And he's... Yeah, he was created by
King Minos. No, he was imprisoned by King Minos.
As a way of...
In Knossos.
In the palace of Knossos. I think the Minotaur was possibly the son of an affair between Zeus and King Minos' wife.
Who was a swan. It's always a swan.
there would have been a swan involved. I'm quite prepared to admit that I might be wrong about all of the above, but yeah, we can rest assured there will have been a swan involved.
Yeah. Because if you shag a swan, you get a cow-headed man. Everyone knows that. That's simple genetics.
It's a simply way you shouldn't do it.
Yeah. Now, is something to do with...
Theseus is the guy who goes in and kills him.
Icarus.
Icarus and Daedalus were servants of King Minos who tried to escape. Slaves, really.
Icarus built the labyrinth as the best way to get people to buy...
Daedalus built the labyrinth.
Yeah, as the best way to get people to buy gifts from the... Because if you visit a labyrinth, and stately homes around the country have this, if you have a labyrinth, you're more likely to get tired out and then visit the cafe.
Donkey milk soap.
Buy some donkey milk soap.
Daedalus was also the inventor of the pencil with a pencil sharpener on the top, and you need to shift those units. Yeah. It was his first stroke of genius.
And of course, he managed to solve the paradox, which is that you can't... How do you sharpen the pencil on the sharpeners attached to the pencil?
Yeah.
By coming up with the edit.
You buy another one.
Getting another pencil, which actually, which again did wonders for the Knossos gift shop.
Yeah, yeah. What else is it telling us about Violet and her fate?
Oh my God, the Cleontena mind. So, by the way, is this a satire about something to do with like Gen Z and having a harder time than their parents did or something?
No, I think it's just an erotic book about people who want to jack off a Minotaur, isn't it?
Sometimes it's as simple as that, isn't it?
Otherwise, what's the message? Don't try and get a job. If it's difficult to get a job, you're better off going at home, because if you try and get a job, it might be with a wanky dinosaur.
Right.
Or Minotaur. I mean, you know, fill it in, whatever. Any sort of beast or mythical creature. Yeah.
How's it going with your kids' book, The Wanky Dinosaur, by the way? Is it still self-published? Is it still the self-publishing route?
Very much self. Very much popping it under people's doors. Yeah. just try and get the word to spread.
Guerrilla marketing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Violet, the Cleontela Minotaurs, humanoid beasts. Her job involves milking them.
Okay.
I.e., collecting their semen for pharmaceutical purposes.
What?
This is basically the story of the donkey soap industry. That's what it is, an expose. It's like the Animal Farm of the donkey.
It's a satire
on the donkey milk soap. She ends up, who would have seen this coming?
Mm.
She ends up developing feelings for one of the Minotaurs. What the flippity? I thought I knew where I was with this book. I don't know where I am now. Yeah. a particularly stern, deep-voiced one. I think that's how it works. That's like Beauty and the Beast.
They've gone a bit Heathcliff. It's, oh, he's a bit grumpy.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Because most of them have got squeaky high voices, and they're like, hiya!
oh. I'm just watching Housewives of Cheshire. You toss me off, I won't even notice.
Would you? Yeah, you got, it's like a poison. You got to get it out. You wouldn't toss me off, would you? I've had such a rough day.
Are those black trousers? They really suit you. Black trousers.
It's weird to be wearing black trousers, though, in the semen milking area, because I'd wear something lighter than that. Maybe some light linen.
Do you know what? I'm ready to go again. Could you toss me off again? Thanks, Lord.
But that's the thing, isn't it? In like Beauty and the Beast and the Disney, if you're a monster, if you're a male monster, it doesn't matter how grotesque you are, as long as you're like, come this way, Sally. Then Sally will love you because you're stern and sort of
like Nosferatu.
Like Nosferatu.
Nosferatu. Nosferatu. Would you like to go to dinner with me?
It will need to be dinner, not brunch, for some odd reason.
Stern.
It feels more formal for a first date. Yeah.
Do not order the garlic soup. It is horrible.
Or the chicken crucifix. Yes, of course, I've been to a fucking harvester. I'm here every night.
So hang on, I'm just realizing that there is a scene out there of I presume women who think Minotaurs are sex. This is a thing, right? This must be a kind of scene.
Well, I don't know who's written it. Is he either that or there's a male writer or an AI writer who assumes that that scene exists? Yeah. I don't know. Or wishes that such a scene exists because they possibly resemble a Minotaur and they're a bit grumpy, you know?
I think, look, I don't know. It's not rocket science here. It's being muscly is sexy.
Yeah.
Having hooves is sexy. Being big and strong is sexy.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I've never actually held a buffalo or a bison or any kind of ungulate dick. But, I mean, I imagine they're quite well hung, aren't they, bulls? I mean, they're a sort of symbol of masculinity, aren't they, in a way, a bull?
Yeah.
So I could see that maybe. Well, I suppose it's which bit of the bull do you get, which bit of the human do you get? Isn't it?
So is your contention that it's implicit that the Beast and similar heroes, they've got a big old swinger? Is that what you're saying?
I think basically, yeah.
No. I'm the king of the swingers. The jungle VIP.
Yeah. Right, so she gets to Phoenix, one of them, who begins to request her specifically. God, that's gross.
It's sounding increasingly sort of Stockholmian coercive, isn't it?
Yeah.
Why do you find that bit particularly gross, Henry?
There's something about a Minotaur requesting that's just gross.
Yeah. It shouldn't make a difference who's tossing you off if you're a Minotaur and you're doing it for pharmaceutical purposes.
Exactly. Right. The whole thing should just be a cold, transactional...
Well, it should be mechanised, let's be honest.
Yes, it should be mechanised. And how is your Minotaur dick pump invention coming on, Ben? Is it still self-funded?
I'm still very much at the stage of just putting it under people's doors.
Which suggests it hasn't got enough girth, to be fair, if you're able to do that. That might be one of the problems.
I'm having to mattock away the bottom half of most of the doors before it...
And then rolling it through.
Yeah. Just getting the word out there, you know.
Anyway, so there's a component, so there's a romance component, including sexual tension.
Mm.
It's a human monster romance with strong erotic sexual content. The romance develops slowly, slow burn. I think it always is if your lover is semi humanoid.
Mm.
Heavy on explicit sexual scenes involving non human anatomy, size differences, fluid, etc.
Oh, God. I'm in.
Where do I sign? Just to get the book. I only want the book if I have to sign for it, please.
I think it's time for a Pompidou, isn't it?
It is.
It might. I think it is.
And in fact, we could maybe use a Pompidou jingle that someone sent in.
Oh, yes, nice. Please, Lush.
Oh, actually, I don't think we do have one.
Well, this is a classic. It's a classic case of them needing the Pompidou jingle. Then,
yeah, okay, double Pompidou,
double Pompidou,
Pompidou, Pompidou,
Dompidou. Play the jingle. And now it's time for Dompidou. Pompidou.
Ordinarily, dear sweet listeners, I mean, we'd be firing up the bean machine.
But essentially, someone was too busy rubbing donkey milk soap into their own body and forgot to rub donkey milk soap into the central cogs of the bean machine, which is the only thing that keeps it lubricated.
The bean machine readout is therefore saying that it needs urgent maintenance. It's also saying that it's not calling it the algorithm, but an algorithm.
Well, it's the algorithm, isn't it? So it's
the
algorithm.
Which is...
Global warming has rapidly overtaken the hindquarters of the machine.
Yeah. It's a very slow-paced rhythm, isn't it, the algorithm?
And then crept up down into Henry's tubes and caused an algorithm leak.
Yeah.
Leading to what you just listened to.
Mm. Hey, so are you blaming me?
Yeah.
In part, yeah, I think we need a full guy, and I think that's probably you.
Okay.
I mean, you're the one who technically works for the bean machine, isn't it? Because you're
supposed to be doing the maintenance.
You're technically employed by it, aren't you?
You are the Violet of the bean machine story.
Well, okay, here's a secret I wasn't going to tell you guys.
That's a good point.
I had to take some cogs and sprockets and other parts out of the bean machine to make my mechanical Minotaur semen milking machine.
Bastard.
I'm so sorry.
Of course. You crazy man.
So anyway.
So in reality, I mean, yeah, I'm feeling slightly under the weather. We've recorded some nice things. There's a feeling that... Are we slacking off?
There's a feeling that you might perish in the next 20 minutes,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
That's the feeling I'm getting.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
And yeah. We don't want it to be on our watch, essentially.
Yeah. No. So, with that said, why don't we read some emails?
Yes, please.
Let's do it.
And why don't we play an version of the email jingle sent in by Memnor. Okay.
Wonderful.
Memnor?
Name. Where's Memnor, Memnor from?
Well, the Infiniduke. Lord of the 19th Realm. Memnon, I mean, I thought I defeated him at the Battle of Ungard.
Well, seemed but it might be a different Memnon.
It could be a different... You're right, you know what? It might just be a completely different Memnon. Let's find out.
Could be Mike's auntie Memnon.
Could be auntie Memnon, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, she does listen.
Who fought alongside me at the Battle of Ungard. Completely different story.
It caused real problems, didn't it?
That's right. Well, she, her cyber lance... skewered the hovering eyeball that Memnon called his wife. Didn't it? So, I'm not going to forget that now. Right?
Well, that's war's an ugly scene, isn't it? People do things they regret.
It is. It is.
So Memnon are, in fact, a band called right. Memnon.
Okay.
So it's not an individual.
Okay, yeah, different, okay. Different Memnon. Yeah, fine.
Yeah,
so I think this is the first band-submitted jingle, but I quite like that.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
So
it feels like raising the stakes, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Let's go all the way to symphony orchestra, guys. Okay.
Yes, please.
Memnor says, they say, hello, Beans. We write to you to inform you that after several months of enjoying back episodes of your podcast, we have decided on a way to show our appreciation. It is, of course, the only way we know how, which is by creating the music most befitting of the archetypal provincial dad, prog rock.
Oh, yes.
Very good.
To this end, we have included a version of your email jingle in the style of Yes/Rush/Genesis for your entertainment.
What a combo. Lovely.
It's a rich brew.
Yeah.
That is a heady brew.
Many thanks for your podcast, Memnor. Well, let's listen to it.
Thank you, Memnor.
Here we go.
Yes, please.
When you send an email,
anything for me? Just some bullshit when you send an email. This represents progress. Like a robot chewing a horse.
Give me your horse.
My beautiful horse.
Yes, Memnor!
Standing.
Yes!
Very good. That was outstanding.
That was so good.
I feel like that it made me feel like the Postmaster jingle needed its own kind of 80s adventure cartoon show.
You're right. That with the credit sequence.
Yeah.
With impossibly just huge amount of stuff happening in a really quick amount of time, isn't it?
Really fast moving postman.
All the top bits of their
laser
adventures.
Horses.
Yeah. 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 Being swallowed by huge octopuses and stuff.
Yeah.
There's loads and loads. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, wonderful. Memnor. You're my favourite band, Memnor.
Well done, Memnor.
Memnor. We did get the Memnor, and we liked it. Does that work?
Sort of. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it might be at the end of every one of their album reviews. I don't know. It might be the sort of thing every music journalist thinks they've come up with. It feels like one of those.
Okay, cool.
Everything okay, Henry? Are you emailing back to see if you can join Memnor?
I'm just quickly putting
they
together.
They were missing a flute, weren't they? They were missing a grateful flute.
I haven't
flute.
Updated my CV for so long, but I'm just quickly having to throw something together here. I like going to the cinema. No, I was Googling Memnor, and it's some sort of a giant deity.
Oh, I see. They're named after something.
In the Ordning.
From what tradition?
I know, that's what I'm trying to work out, if it's fictional.
I found Memnor's website.
Yeah,
they're from Huddersfield. And Memnor is a deity from Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, nice.
Okay. So it says here.
It's great stuff.
Let's start off with, this is from Jack, and it is a bean first, I think.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
It's a speed bollock.
Speed bollock?
A speed bollock?
It's described as a speed bollock.
Okay. Who's it directed at?
Hi, Beans. In the latest Antarctica episode, Mike suggested that a cold version of Sex in the City would be called Ice Road Sex, missing the rather obvious Ice Road Fuckers. Shame on you.
I'm going to take that. I'm going to accept that, Jack.
Really?
I think because that is what Mike. I was reaching for.
Yeah.
And I didn't even manage a simple pun.
Yeah.
What's the pun?
And that show Ice Road Truckers is the show.
Oh, sorry. I just thought it was a completely crass comment.
No.
So I didn't know. So that's actually quite good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. More power to your bollock.
Yeah.
Speed bollock accepted?
Accepted as swiftly as it was received. Thank you. Yes.
Excellent.
Bollocking accepted.
Sophie emails. Dear Beans, I was doing field work on limestone pavements, and to entertain myself through the monotony of writing down numbers, I started re-listening to your show. One day, whilst walking to my site, brackets, note an area with massive holes and slippery rock, I managed to roll over my ankle on the flat, not slippery or dangerous path, dislocating my ankle and breaking it in three places.
Holy moly. Oh, no.
Whilst in hospital for a week and waiting for surgery, I only had four episodes downloaded onto my phone to listen to on repeat as I tried to sleep. I could not listen to the podcast for months afterwards, and recently I've been forcing myself to listen to it to try and get over it. In your recent episode on hiking, you mentioned limestone, and I fear it may have set me back. Please don't do it again, Sophie.
Oh, Sophie.
Sorry, Sophie.
Because normally it's just a simple drill through the hand, isn't it?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because a lot of people injure themselves listening to our podcast is something that's come up in the past, isn't it?
And it's over and done. And it's usually, an injury you can just deal with a, you know, any sort of spigot you've got lying around at home or what have you, you know.
Or just shove Blu Tack into it, I find. If Blu Tack's straight out of the packet, it's fairly antiseptic,
isn't
it?
For.
Not fully, but.
Oh, Sophie.
Yeah, sorry, Sophie.
That's grim business.
So we won't be referring to limestone from now on. So we'll try and focus on sandstone.
And more igneous rocks.
and the whole igneous rock family is what we'll,
and of course granite,
which is of course a man-made rock. So strictly speaking, would come under a different taxonomy. But for these purposes, I'm happy to let it go.
You saying granite is a man-made rock?
Granite is not a man-made rock.
Let's just move on with the conversation. It's a form of compacted gravel, isn't it? Using concrete as the creosote.
The Pennines beg to differ.
The next bit of content contains harrowing dental scenes. Warning.
Hello, Beans. This is from Ellie.
Hello, Ellie.
It's quite a long one, this, but I like it, I think. I wanted to share with you my very own dentistry misadventure after hearing about Mike's internal ceramic landslide.
Is everything okay there now, Mike?
Yeah.
They replaced it with...
Yeah, with something else.
Good.
I was cycling back from a little swim in a river near my house share in Grenoble, with my trainers tied up, dangling carefree over my handlebars.
Uh-oh.
Can I say that as an image, that's absolutely idyllic?
It screams of imminent danger to me.
it's too good. It can't last.
It's very much the first opening scene of Casualty, isn't it?
Yeah.
Something's going to happen.
Yeah. Casualty, Grenoble edition.
Barefoot as the day I was born. Although the idea of riding a bike barefoot, I find probably quite painful.
It's not comfortable. I've tried it and it's not comfortable.
Yeah. Barefoot as the day I was born, I started whizzing down the slope, as I often did, the wind whistling through my toes, happy as a clam. Then disaster struck. One sneaky little trainer stuck itself between the spokes of my front wheel, immediately stopping it in its tracks and sending me over the handlebars, teeth first into the pavement. Oh, God. I was sitting on the floor trying to gather up my broken bike when two kind men rushed over to help. The first one got a look at me and asked, "Have you always been like that?"
Oh, no.
Oh, dear. That's not a good start.
Like what? No. I replied. Without your teeth, he said.
Oh, my God.
And we started searching for the teeth in the grass next to the road.
You can't reinsert them. It's not like hands. You can't just stitch them back on like hands.
We found two, one still completely intact, root and all, and the other in bits.
Wow. Oh, God.
He presented them to me. I slipped them in my top pocket, and he asked, "But where are the rest?"
Oh, no.
By the way, some people will be passing out listening to this.
Yeah.
Without being able to see myself, I frantically replied, "How many are missing?"
I frankly replied,
He didn't answer, but went back to combing the grass. As it turns out, only two were gone, but I've got a rather large front teeth, and it looked like a whole bunch had been knocked out. He then called an ambulance.
God almighty. She wasn't listening to us in this story, was she? This is just a horror story.
This is just a teeth.
We didn't have to take on board guilt.
No. I mean, I'm feeling quite a lot of guilt about the person who rolled over their ankle and had to have surgery and broke their...
Yeah, I'm feeling guilt about that one already. Yeah.
Sophie, yeah.
Anyway, the ambulance came, said that she was fine.
Well, they were wrong, weren't they? They were absolutely wrong.
They were massively wrong. All the teeth have flown out.
A few minutes later, I got on the tram to head home with my top pocket full of small bloody remains. When I got back, I got the same response from Google as Mike and tried to fill a small glass with my spit. Too much blood, though, so I ended up putting it in milk. When I got to the dentist the next morning, I showed her the tooth to give her an idea of the size and shape. I'm skipping some more horrible bits.
Okay.
She reluctantly disinfected the entire tooth before shoving it back into my gum. She also told me I should have shoved it back in straight away myself and it would still be alive.
What? Is that true? You've got to shove things back in. I thought the whole point of medicine was because you can't just shove
it in. Because it was a bit more complicated than that.
Yeah.
It's also a lot to ask in that situation. If you've just fallen off a hill, you know, at speed.
Yeah.
It's a lot to ask.
It is a lot to ask.
I feel quite queasy now. I'm sorry to all of our listeners. But yeah, thank you, Ellie. I'm glad that all turned out okay.
Well, did it all turn out okay?
We don't know, but we hope it did. I'm sure it did. I hope it did. Thank you, Ellie,
It may be that she still just wanders the streets of Grenoble going, "Hello, I am the lady who lost her teeth." To people.
It makes my test trauma sort of pale into insignificance.
Yeah.
Golly, thank you.
I suppose the lesson is put shoes on your feet.
Yeah.
Where possible.
She doesn't need to hear that. She knows that. That's the last thing she needs to hear.
No. So I take that back. Actually, do what you like with your shoes. But do put them on your feet, actually. I mean, yeah. Do what you like with your shoes.
Morgan emails.
Hello, Morgan.
Hi, Morgan.
Dearest Beans, it is with regret that I must bollock Ben. So many bollocks today.
Yeah. When you're down as well, when you're
being bollocked when you're down.
Feeble. Mm.
It is with regret that I must bollock Ben for mixing up cybergoth with steampunk.
Oh.
Cybergoths have neon hair, brightly coloured clothes, often latex, and gas masks. Steampunks are the ones who wear begoggle top hats, Victorian-esque suits, and a lot of brown. Cybergoth has all but disappeared, with only the most dedicated holding out into 2025. Steampunk seems to be perennially popular for reasons that elude me. As Henry described them as kids, because I think you were describing some people that you thought were...
Yeah, in Edinburgh. I
find it unlikely that they were steampunks, as I've yet to see a steampunk under 35. Interesting.
Hmm.
I would like to add to this email, I'm of neither persuasion. I'm a metalhead, which just consists of wearing T-shirts with bands with completely unreadable logos. Best wishes, Morgan.
Thank you, Morgan.
Thanks, Morgan.
Okay, good bit of knowledge. How do you feel about that, Ben, as a bollocking? Are you going to accept that?
I think it's fine, yeah. Yeah. Bollocking accepted. Yeah. And I feel like I've learned something there.
Bollocking accepted. It was a fairly targeted surgical bollock, wasn't it? It was in, out.
Yeah.
Yes.
It did the job.
Yes, it was specific. It was...
Yeah. And it's incredible what they can do now with bollock technology because, of course, that bollock was all completely remotely controlled, wasn't it?
And she's delivered it coldly and accurately. And well done, Morgan.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, we normally now play the Patreon jingle, but I'm going to play one sent in by one of you. Why not? Let's do double jingles. Yes.
Very good.
Double jingles.
Yes.
This is from Morgan.
Another Morgan.
Yes.
Different Morgan?
I don't know if it is the same. It might be the same Morgan. Hang on. It is the same Morgan.
Golly gosh.
He bollocked me about cybergoths.
Yeah, okay.
Morgan writes, Howdy Beans, Beethoven's Fifth, Debussy's Clair de Lune, the Patreon jingle. These great pieces of music throughout our history have inspired and delighted thousands. As the greatest and most humble composer this nation has ever seen, brackets apart from all the other ones, I've put my own twist on this modern-day classic. I've cranked the forebodingness up to 11 with a choir and included my own voice, pitch-shifted down a few octaves.
Ah.
This sounds like it might be quite terrifying.
Yeah.
Anyway, great. Thank you, Morgan. Let's see.
Thank you again.
Memnor, arise!
Memnor!
That was very
We've sinister. Resummoned Memnor!
Blimey, thanks, Morgan. That was,
yeah, really fearsomely good. Sinister.
If you'd like to sign up for our Patreon, go to patreon.com/threebeansalad. If you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout-out from Mike from the Sean Bean Lounge, where Mike was only last night.
Sure was.
And it was a lovely smell down there, wasn't there, Mike? Because, you're making the first ever Sean Bean Lounge donkey milk soap.
I am indeed. Thank you, Benjamin. And here's my report. We were making our first ever donkey milk soap at the Sean Bean Lounge last night. Step one was finding amenable donkeys, for which Fran Barnett, Matthew Wood, Slagarella, Helen Callanan, and David Payne were sent among donkey kind to live at one with them and build networks. They took it too far, went full donkey, and were lost to the project. And so Matt Siebert, Frederick Yesen, Dan Cook, and Sophie Elliott were sent in to try again. This group was successful and secured the trust and willingness of a coffle of asses, who were then each named after Sean Bean loungers who have perished in embarrassing circumstances and whose deaths have not yet and will never be made public, including Johnny Martins, Keith, Michael Banyan, Princess Kate, the Ratface husband, Andrew and Katie, Roly-Poly Little Bat-Faced Girl, Steph Acton, MJ and Sam Rankine assessed the donkeys for ripeness and, when ready, gave the signal for milking to begin. Various methods were tested. Victoria L, Marina C and Stephen Fitzpatrick laid on their backs and deployed gravity and teat squeezing. Mary from England, John James Davies, Brianna Smith and Zachary Nielsen laid the donkeys on their backs and deployed suction and tugging. Pingers Les, Oliver Sanders, Liam Kent and Jack Duff carried donkeys on their backs and ran the 15 peak challenge. Shelley, Adam Meddings Lee, Matthew Turner, Madison Funicello, Michael Johnson and Andrew Warhurst attempted telekinetic milking and got a group migraine. The milk was collected by Sarah Fairhead and Mighton in Luke Clargo's many ill-fitting hats, and the amount was measured by Stephen Ball using units of Shabadoo da Bonks. Then began the churning, with Lisa Pony Hart, formerly Marshall, Hannah Stembridge, Andy Clark in Cape Town and Jamie Campbell dancing the Rotherham jig upon the milk. Ellie Knightsbridge, Kate Brighouse Evans, and Patrick I brought milk onto a trapeze and churned using milkabatics. And Tanya Watzel, Jonah Kinross, Jamie Foster, and Maggie Madole spread rumours about one section of milk to other sections of milk to cause infighting churning. The donkey curds were mixed with lye and donkey oils by Alchemy Distillery, Emily Walker and Alex Priestley, in a specially adapted maxi pocket, and the whey was drunk by CB, Darren Cox, Grizz and Callum Addis on their way to an audition for Magic Mike Sean Bean Edition. Megan, Joe, Kerry Flynn and Rebecca Andrews dried the mixture out on warm dogs. The set soap was then carved into the shapes of Sean Bean's most laverable characters by Emlyn Owen, Tom Jewell, Geordie Angus and Gracie Volin, and a bar was tested on Finn Scanlon, Paul Spensley and Andrew Clark in the bath with catastrophic consequences. Thanks all.
Right, let's finish off with a version of our theme tune sent in by one of you. This is from Mike from Gateshead.
I was introduced
to your pod fairly recently en route to some recording sessions with a fellow musician friend of mine, Tom, a big fan and principal oboe of the BBC Symphony Orchestra.
Blimey. Wowee.
Wet. Blimey. I noticed that no one has yet written your theme in the style of Debussy. To properly immerse myself in his sound world, I naturally had to contract syphilis. Probably the most straightforward element of the process, courtesy of a sit-down wee at Gateshead Wetherspoons. Best wishes, Mike from Gateshead.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Gateshead. And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Yeah, we'll see you next time.
Thank you very much.
Cheerio.
Goodbye.
Bye. I feel quite emotional.
Stuff.
That was beautiful.
Thank you, Mike.